I was plugging away. Okay, so let me make one suggestion about how we're going to do it. The best categorization of Agarata is Nenyakov. And the vast majority of pieces have Maral on it, but I would still rather go with the way that Yaakov has it. And if there's a piece or two that doesn't have Maral, we'll speak something else. But I just would like to keep, if the Kvias is the Agaritas, we might as well stick with that.
Do you mean Yaakov as well as Maral?
Yeah. Well, the Yaakov is the Likud. I mean, the Yaakov inside is the Likud of all the Agaritas on the Masechta. Whatever he brands Agarita is Agarita. And the Maral explains a vast majority of it, but not every piece. So, and the first piece would be the Raya. So, okay, so let's start.
A new person, Yosef Solomon, joined this year.
Yes.
Okay.
I've
got a request from Matis Yahu to tape this year if possible.
Yes, I am taping it, and there's a request from Zalik Kleiman claiming to do videos or not. I think we decided not to do videos because it messes up the whatchamacallit. Huh?
Right, we tried it, it didn't work.
Okay, so we'll just you have to use a fantasy and picture who's there.
I keep an image of the Rav. I look at it during this year.
Okay, good. Tanya, Rebbe Olmer.
Sorry, just mute your microphone, Zoli. Right, got it. Okay.
Yeah, because yeah. Okay. Tanya, Rebbe Oymel, Loma Nisra Pashas, Noza Pashas, Soita, Loma Lachotcha Kolaroya, Sotbikul Kula Yazas Miriayan. Very, very famous Gemara. Rashi brings it, and it's the first piece of Agarata. There is no direct morale on this. There is in Gurari, actually. He speaks a little bit just in Pshat. But let's talk about it because it's a very important piece. So the Chazal tell us that the reason why Nisra Pashas, Pasha Soita is Kolaroya, Sotbikul Kula. The morale in Bamidbar, where Rashi brings this Chazal, he's bothered by a pshat question. First of all, he says, well, where should we bring Saita Kula? Where should we bring Saita? In other words, is there any natural parasha? And then he says, and if you'll tell me that every single parasha in the Torah has a reason why it follows another parasha, why didn't Chazal dash every single parasha? What is it doing next to parasha? What is Bros Kahanim doing next to Soita? You know, and so on, and to next to Noza. You know, this can go on to with every single parasha. So the Maral says that he either has a diakim pshat or he wants to say that since Soita is the opposite of Kedusha, and this parasha deals with the kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash, the kedusha of a nazir, kedusha of a kohanim. You know, the whole parish is a parish that deals with topics that the word kedusha would apply to it really well. Therefore, Sota sticks out. It's not just that it has no connection, but it seems antithetical to the rest of it. That's his pshat and pshat, and fine. I'd like to point out two or three other nekudas here that are very interesting. One is, this comes from Reb Tzadik, and the truth is, it's something that's kind of very rooted in Chassidus. There's a story of Dal Shem Tov about it, or somebody else. The understanding that a person who sees an Aveira, he sees it because it's meant to be some sort of guide to him that he's doing something wrong. Now, there's a famous story, I don't know if it's about Shem Tov or somebody a door later, that he saw Mice of Chol Shabbos and immediately went to learn Hilchah Shabbos and so on to be more careful, because he said that if I saw it, it must be that I'm being shown it in order to do tshuva on it and so on. So that's
what's that story about?
I believe it's one of the early Doros of Chassidus. I don't remember if it's even the Baal Shem Tov or it's somebody a generation later. I just don't remember now. If it's vitally important, I could try to look it up. But Al-Kapanim, the idea is certainly very rooted, that if you see something wrong, then some... So one way of understanding that idea is mystical. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing it to you in order that that's why he's showing it to you. In other words, why would somebody so great and holy have seen something so terrible if not for the fact that it's meant to be a lesson for you? That restricts it to very, very holy people. And there's another story. Somebody once came to a Rebbe and said he has machshava zoros, strange, you know, alien thoughts when he's davening, whatever. And he said alien means that it's not normally part of your mindset. But this is not alien to you. This is who you are. This is you. So for us, if we would see something wrong, it's hard to say that we could say itself, oy, vey, vey, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu show it to us? It must be that we're doing something terrible. I think most of us, if we're a little honest with ourselves, would say, you know, I mean, that's what we're part of. That's our world. That's who we are. And that's that. So there's another, I would like to give it a little bit of different twist, which I think is also in line with it, but a little more rooted in our world. If I can give a mashal, they have these tests for tuberculosis where they inject you with some sort of matter, and they can tell if your body has the antibodies to it. You know, there's some sort of little rash or something that comes up, and that shows that you've once been exposed to it and your body is sensitive to it. So a person who is so removed from a world, if, for instance, somebody who has no shaykhis to the world of Avera will not even see the Avera. I was once had the experience, I came back very late at night with a train, like somebody picked me up 2:30 in the morning in the station. The station area was not a very savory place. And even though there were people there, but I don't know, creepy was an understatement. And somebody from Yeshiva picked me up. This boy who picked me up was, let's kind of a man of the world and so on. And when we started driving back, he explained to me who was peddling drugs and who was peddling something else and who was this. And I was like kind of shocked. I said, well, how'd you notice it? He said, well, didn't you see it? I said, no, I just saw people. I didn't see anything. It's if you're not part of something, if you have some kesha to it, if you have some sense of it, so a person who is, the same scene can be witnessed by two people, and if you noticed it and you're picked up on it, it means it's something that's part of your, is somewhere along the line you have a shoresh fit. So this is a lot more of a practical, let's call it, a down-to-earth psychological explanation of it, which I think is also true. Reb Tzadik says two more things about this inyan. He says that, and they're fairly similar, he says that if the taiva leads to something. In other words, there's a gather of avera gereres avera, and that's just that's more mystical. There's another element, the koach of taiva, besides creating a craving for something X, Y, or Z, it also effectively overrides seichel. So if a person is thinking of wearing shatnez, well, we don't have really a craving for shatnez. So the person is tempted because the suit is nice, and then he says, no, if I shouldn't, and we have a bit of an easier time with an avera like that. When we have something that we have a real taiva to eat or to look at or whatever, it, over there, our seichel becomes kind of numb. And taiva itself leads to problems. Even if you're not holding by doing the avera, the very fact that you allow yourself to be overcome by taiva means that you don't have control for a while. So the Reb Tzadik says it's teaching us that taiva itself creates a problem. And even if the taivas that you have in you are heta gomer, our taivas, let's say just for kugel on Shabbos, for kugel and chong, let's say that's all taiva, it doesn't make a difference. Because taiva carries in itself the ability to numb the senses and seichel, that creates the problem. So a general sense of it is that a person needs to control taiva in a similar explanation. He says that taivas are achila and taivas of arayas are close to each other because they're both taivas, and therefore one will translate to the other. So even though the person says, I mean, I've got no taiva for women, I don't look at them, I don't talk to them, all I do is I just drink a lot of wine, so what's the problem? So it's not just that if you drink wine, taiva itself leads to taiva. Taiva itself has a commonality to it, and that's why a person stays away from taiva. It's very interesting. I once heard on a practical note from a Slalom Chassid. He explained to me once the following, that in Ger, I don't know if today as much, but when the Beis Yisrael was around, the one thing they worked on more strong than anything else was Taivas Nashim. Like it was, you know, that was, everything was around it, and, you know, to stay away from it, like with the greatest extreme. That was the Avodah of Geris. And in line with that Avodah, the Beis Yisrael felt that you must give the people an outlet in Taivas Achila. So the Gerers were notorious for eating a lot, it's kind of big, bulky fellows. And they also had a different standard of Hechsher than most people. And that was part of let them indulge. There was a story where somebody came to the Rebbe. I mean, this is a typical story. And I guess the Rebbe discerned that this person is less than Zohir in Inyan of Taiva. He took out two chocolate bars and says, indulge in this and not in anything else. So there was a general sense that by giving people an outlet in Taivas Achila, you would be able to pull in the reins to an extreme on Taivas Nashim. This Slonim Jungerman told me that the Slonim Rebbe, the Siva Shalom, was very against it. He said, Taiva is Taiva, and if a person has a part of his personality that's out of control, it's not going to be good for the other part either. You can't be selective. If you give in to your taivas, it will at some point spill over into another taiva. That was just sort of a difference of opinion on a psychology and how it would work. Come on, that's...
So, just a question.
Yes.
If you squash the taiva, don't you risk squashing the whole kind of rotten of the man to grow, you know?
It's also true. So they did. I mean, it's interesting. In Ger... Ger did push a lot, I guess, the macho aspect. I mean, they were rough and tough and pushy and like at a tish. I guess all the testosterone went out. I mean, the tish, the Ger tish on the Beis Yisrael was everybody standing and shoving each other like crazy to get close to the Rebbe. People would come back. It was a very attractive chassidus. People liked it a lot. And there were a lot of boys in the mid that went, especially English boys liked it a lot. They're from England. They had like a special worn-out chalat to wear because you came back after 2 hours, you looked like you had been in a major wrestling match. I mean, the things were torn, you were sweated, you were beat up. I think that there was so there was a lot of that type of oomph, you know. It wasn't... personality-wise, they were extremely pushy, and I guess that's where they were able to ignite a fire to grow to and so on. I'd like to share another Hasidish Nekuda, which is very, very fascinating, and in many ways, it also expresses a fundamental Hasidus. This is a word from Nachum Mendel Vitebsk, the Prioritz. Nachum Mendel Vitebsk was second or third generation, if you wish, Hasidus. He was a Rebbe Chaver of the Baal HaTanya, and he was one of the two Miyastim of the Hasidus Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. He was a very big person. And he writes the following. He says, knowledge, even Torah knowledge, is something that if it's not brought into Olam HaMaisa, becomes destructive. So a person who walks around, he saw the Seder Kekula, and he has a lot of insight now about how corrupt humans are and how terrible they are and how strong Taiva is and v'chulu v'chulu v'chulu. If it doesn't come into the world of Maisa, it becomes destructive. It's a p'china of chachmas merubim b'maisav, and this becomes very, very destructive. And therefore, the person must be mazas mayayin. So he's saying an incredibly different perspective. He's saying if you saw Saita Bekilkula, if you're going to just remain with the cognitive lesson, and even the emotional lesson, but you didn't bring it into the Olam HaMaisa, you will become destroyed and worse because of it. And this is a very, very Hasidish Nekuda. It goes to the heart of much of Chassidus, which that was their primary issue with the non-Hasidic world. This was part of even Kabbalah. The Chassidus learns Kabbalah in order to make the avoda more beslivus. That's the het of learning Kabbalah. It's the reason for learning Kabbalah. In the Goyen's world, learning Kabbalah is because knowing Torah is Hashem. So let's I want to ponder this for a minute and think about the point of it. So what is the point of it actually? So there's a tremendous depth in this point. I'd like to consider it. If a person, if let's say you come and you tell me, there's somebody in the community who's going hungry, doesn't have what to eat at night. So if I don't react by doing anything by it, then basically the conclusion that my brain reaches is, it's fine, this is the way things are, and it's fine, and it stays that way. The message that you imprint on your brain is, people starving require no action on my part. And this is one of the issues when we read, for instance, there are numerous scandals, unfortunately, with all sorts of chashva people and this and that, the other thing. And our reaction is that, first of all, we do our best to get all the details, and then we say, oh yeah, yeah, how terrible, how terrible, how terrible. And we feel, at least, you know, it's making us feel more and more terrible, and it's sort of a little bit of a musa sefer. But the truth is, what happens, the opposite. One of two things happens. Either I feel very, very justified with myself. I say, oh, I'm a big tzaddik. Two, it also allows me, calculates what's considered unthinkable, what's not. So if so-and-so does Averis, and so-and-so does Averis, so-and-so does Averis, okay. So Averis have now become norm. It's like, you know, they're just like in psychology, just like in any science, we define norm by the statistics. We don't start with norm and say how many people are normal. Normal is the curve, the top of the curve for the general population. So if you tell me that such and such great person, such and such great person, such and such great person have done terrible things, then, you know, then these things are not so terrible, and it's something that one could do. Or whatever it is, it weakens it. Unless it forces on, unless a person says, I can't let this happen to me because it's so terrible, and I must make some steps and take some concrete steps. If I don't concretize it, then I am going to, that chachma is going to go no place. It's counterproductive. And you know, it's something where, for instance, let's take somebody who's a big lamdin, and he comes up with a lot of good shailas and hakiris and stuff in a gemara and so on. If it doesn't increase his sensitivity in terms of shmiras hamitzvahs, then basically becomes a game. You know, it's sort of a yeah. You could say this way, you could say that way, you could say other way. If coming up, if saying that this is a serious problem doesn't evoke in me a lamaisic response, then there's a cognitive understanding that, you know what, yeah, you know, it's not okay, beseda. You know, that's so it becomes, in that sense, counterproductive. So Aroya said to Kulo, if you have that information, you must do something about it, because or else you're going to be destroyed by it. That's what he says. It's the safe is called Pri'aretz. It's a word that rings true to the very heart of Hasidus. That's I think that's the word has a lot of importance that way. Okay, so that's the first piece over here. Let's go to the second piece. And on the second piece, we already have Maral and others. It's one of these. So let's see the piece inside the Gemara. I'm going to show by a Yitzhak. When Rish Lakish would start learning Pasha Saita, he would say like this: Ein mezavgin lele adam isha elefi maisav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a person a woman according to his maisim. So he says, Shenema kileinuach shevet haresh agar tzadikim. It says that the staff of the wicked will not rest on the nachla of the girl of the tzaddikim. Meaning, in other words, he's implying that even though there was some sort of even though the man seems to be the great tzaddik over here, and he's somebody who's bringing her to account and so on and so forth, then he should be he's like the big tzaddik and she's the Rasha. You should know HaKadosh Baruch Hu matched up like to like. Amar Rav Chanan Rabbi Yochanan, v'kosher lezavgun k'kriyas yamsuf. And it's kosher to the HaKadosh Baruch Hu finds making shiduchim kosher k'kriyas yamsuf. Shenema l'kim moishe v'yachidim b'aysa. So Rashi says so he says, what's the lezavgam? Hanach the lefi maisav. The needing to be mezavik people fi maisim is shver lakiras yamsuf ke shenishtanu sidrei breishis, which on the surface of it seems to be a very, very difficult thing to understand. I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mezavik zivugim based, so if it would be based on some sort of extraordinary formula of, I don't know, some sort of mystical or something not of this world, then we understand that it's like Kriyas Yamsuf because it's not Derech HaTeva. But matching up a tzaddik with a tzaddik and a rasha with a rasha, I mean, yes, it takes a HaKadosh Baruch Hu to know your machshavos, but the etzem pu'ula one wouldn't think would be so hard. But I'll go upon it. And what's the pasuk? Shenemar alekim moishev yechidim baisa moitza sir mikoisharis. Al tikri moitzi elakim moitzi. So eini. So may I ask for Amar Yudah Marav Arboim Yoyim Koni Tzias Avlad Basko Yoytzes Vemeres Vasplaini Leplaini Bayis Plaini Leplaini Soda Plaini Leplainis. There's this concept of Arboim Yoyim Koni Tzias Avlad that can't be mean a tzaddik in Russia, because koidem Yetzias Avlad is always a matziv of bechira. And therefore, a person cannot be possibly considered tzaddik and so on. So even if HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the future, but that can't be, it can't be called a zivug that we understand and appreciate. So Like Kasha, but Zivig Rishon, but Zivig Sheni. So Moses says there's a difference in Zivig Rishon. Zivig Rishon is just Lefia Mazel, Rashi says. Zivig Sheni Lefia Maisav. And in Zivig Sheni, it's very hard to be Mezavikit. Lefia Sheni Basugo. Because she's not his Basugo. That's what Rashi says. Now, that in itself is incredibly hard to understand. Because we were things the other way around. Imagine someone told you, I make shidduchim by carefully evaluating the character and the personality of each one of them, the woman and the man, and that's when I read the shidduch and so on. The second one says, well, the way I do it is, I have a big barrel of names for women, a big barrel of names for men, I pull a piece of paper out of this one, a piece of paper out of this one, and I match them up. Which one would we think has a better chance of succeeding? Which one is going to need an awfully good shatchan to make it work going forward, and maybe a marriage counselor? Obviously, if you match up two people by what they are, their characters, their personality, and so on, that stands a good chance of being okay. If you match up people out of, quote-unquote, just out of pure luck, then one would think that it would be very difficult. Like, Hashem would have to use extraordinary powers to make it happen. And yet, it says the exact opposite, Rashi says. Rashi says, Zivik Rishon Zivik Sheni. Rashi also doesn't quite say what Zivik Rishon Zivik Sheni is. The Pashto Pshat will assume here is that it means a first marriage and a second marriage after someone died, after someone's divorced. That's something. Hello?
Hi.
Yeah. Oh, I guess. Is it a Krishna Zivik Sheni?
We left off at Rashi doesn't quite say.
Right. Rashi says over here, Rashi says Zivik Rishon Lefi Amazel Zivik Sheni Fi Maisav. Rashi doesn't say exactly what Zivik Rishon Zivik Sheni is. I mean, the common pshat is understood to mean first or second, but it's Lav Dafka, and we'll see. So let's go slowly here. This is now. One more point about a goddess of this nature. Anytime we talk about things that are in a different world, it means that we have limited ability to sort of interpret it into this worldly, this world musagim. You know, it's this concept of koydem yitzias avlad and so on. Those are not concepts that have a real translation to our musagim. And there are people very good as they have a whole checklist of what ifs. What if. So we do need to clear up the different chazal and understand, you know, when chazal say that shemikad mena acher and all those that the Rishonim do ask and speak about it. But it is going to be limited the amount of tachlis interpretation you can give for it. And you can't just sort of turn it into a shacharach, because it's like taking a globe and making a map out of it. Something is going to give. It either won't have the same shape, the same size. Something's not going to be right because it's an impossibility. So these are musagim that are not of this world musagim, and we will need to be able to use a little bit of sort of, what's the right word for it? You know, to keep a bit of a distance and say, okay, it's not literal and you can't have every prat. But let's go to the core of what Chazal say, and then we'll work our way backwards. Let's look at the Maral in this case. The Maral is over here in the Chiddush HaGadis, I'm sure you will have, and we'll look at it. Ein mezavgin la'odam isha l'fi ma'isav. Dov ezeh pashut ke'ish v'isha basa echad. Lefikach ein mezavgin la'odam fi ma'isav. Okama v'kosha zavgin k'yos yamsuf, ratzuloyma. Kishem shu pele godl, lekroya dova shu echod, kemoi ha yom shu echod, vekoshu lechalig la frida lishnayim, kahu pele godl lechabe shne dvorim, sheheim ba atzum chulokim, kichsiv moish of yechidim baiso, kloim yechidim shem chulokim forod nosho isom lechabo isom, vokuma kriyas yam shu choluk dova shu echod. Let's talk about this and let's understand what the Maharal is saying over here. Let's give an example. When we take a plate and break it into two pieces, we don't have two little plates. We have two shevakles. In other words, a plate is one entity. When we try to break it into two, we destroy it. We don't get, I mean, halachically, if it's still roya to have some mashkin, each one is still metame, but tachlis, breaking a kli into two doesn't give us two kelim. So anything which is one unit, like a plate, breaking the two does not create two plates. One. Let's go to the other side. Let's say I have Legos, and I snap them together. I can make a wonderful. Building of sorts. I mean, people actually do these things. They make this sukkah out of Lego, and this out of Lego, that out of Lego. But they're not one unit. You put a little pressure at any one point, it falls apart. I say it's a chain of many pieces. It's many pieces linked together. But I can't really say it became one. If I were to take these pieces and melt them together, it would become one unit. But then I couldn't take them apart without breaking it. So for us, the idea of having something that can be equally valid as being an entire world unto itself and equally valid as being part of something else is almost an impossibility. Yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it with the Bria Olam. The very Bria itself is engineered in a way that, on the one hand, we can see ourselves as totally independent and self-sufficient units. I am a person and I feel that I have within myself everything. And yet, when I have the mindset of being Mizdabik and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, My whole understanding is that I am becoming one with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we're one entity. And I don't have a self. So I am capable of two opposite, conflicting feelings. One is me together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one, or I myself am an entirety. Those are two things that are almost mutually exclusive to us in any reality we can see it. Because things either remain pieces that are apart. It's like a country. You can have a federation where you have different entities come together, like Switzerland, you have cantons that together work on. They still retain their own character. Or you have one nation, and then the individual pieces are just limbs of that and nothing more. So the ability to take two and make one, that the same entity could exist in both phases and be totally valid in both of them, in the sense that there's no apparent lack, that's a chiddush HaKadosh Baruch Hu made into Etzem Bria, and it's the chiddush HaKadosh Baruch Hu made in Tzuras HaAdam with Zoch and Akeva. It's very, very fascinating. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who said, Lo Tov Heyos Adam Levado. Adam never had the sense. Adam Arishan never scratched his head and said, "You know, I'm getting a little older, and what's going to be with a shidduch? I don't like living myself. It's boring. It's annoying. I'd like to get married." He never thought of it. Akash Brocha thought of it, but Adam Arishan was the one who had to make the decision, quote unquote, with whom he would become Adam. And his entire Metzias became so. Ish v'Isha has in itself some of that quality, that on the one hand they exist as independent entities, on the other hand they exist as one unit. I want to use this, and it's probably in line with the Maral's explanation, but I'd like to sharpen it and just put into his words. The
something I don't understand.
Yes.
Yes.
What the Rebbe was saying there in the Bria, we have this dichotomy, isn't it? Not true though. If a Yid feels that he has individual value, independent from Hashem, isn't he wrong?
He's wrong, but we feel it as being totally valid. In other words, it's a feeling that seems to us rooted in the very base of ourselves. Just like you take somebody who's 18 years old, 19 years old, and you ask him, is he missing anything in life? He'll say, no, he's happy, he's perfect, he's fine. Friends are nice, friends are wonderful. Take a person who's been married for a long time, and then, God forbid, he loses a spouse. He's not the same person anymore. It's a type of, I mean, life was good without her, so it's nice with her, but what happened? The answer is, that's the duality of our nature, to be either one or two. I want to add a nekuda to this. That's why you need Arboim Yom Kodem Avlad. It's something that needs, I mean, why do you need, quote unquote, 40 days before the Vlad's born? What's the point of it? The answer is, it's not something that could have been created within this world. It's I'm reaching back to, so when my Metzias is limited to this world, then being separate and apart and distinct is perfectly legitimate. But when I reach back to a Sheresh that's Kodma to the Bria, then I'm part of something else. Exactly the way that we relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If a physical person looks around, he's fine. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a nice thing. It's expression like poetry. It's expression like art. But if a person taps into the Sheresh that's before the Bria, the Echad that comes from, then he realizes he's only half of something. So depending on within the Bria itself, we come into this world alone. We come to this world a Zachar and a Keva comes in a Keva, and each one comes in by themselves. Their ability to be this part of one whole belongs to before the Bria, not to post Bria. In post Bria, we're separate, just like we're separate from Kadosh Baruch Hu. Yet we have in us a shorish of pre-Bria, and in that shorish is we're one, both with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and with this. Okay, we'll hold it here. Any questions? Okay, so Emetz Hashem, next week, we'll, or the same time, and then we'll be off for 2 or 3 weeks, whatever it is. I forgot what how many Thursdays there are, and Emetz Hashem will resume. So next week, Emetz Hashem, same time, same. Okay?
Thank you very much. Good Shabbos.
Okay, good Shabbos. Take care.
Thank you very much.